You're listening to Pep Talk, discussing policy, evidence and practice in Wales. Pep Talk is brought to you by the Wales Centre for Public Policy at Cardiff University.
Hello and welcome to Pep Talk. I'm your host Craig Johnson and today we're discussing an issue that's been a focus of news headlines both here in Wales and across the border in England. That's the rise in the number of people in council tax arrears. It's an issue that's of concern to Welsh ministers too, as last year the current First Minister asked the Wales Centre for Public Policy to examine the evidence around people in debt to public services, including council tax debt, and how support to them could be improved. Joining me today are three experts in this field who help us unpack this issue and offer their insights into solutions to it. My first guest is Helen Hodges, a research officer at the Wales Centre for Public Policy. Helen, you've been working on the issues of vulnerable debtors for the centre. Do you want to explain quickly how we ended up working on this for Welsh Government?
Yes, certainly. When Mark Drakeford was actually the Cabinet Secretary for Finance, he approached the centre as he was interested to explore the evidence around how might public services and its contracted partners in Wales better respond to vulnerable debtors, especially those subject to prosecution and prison. And this actually formed part of a wider commitment that the Welsh Government has to make sure that citizens who become indebted to the Welsh public services are treated justly and proportionally. And there's a real motivation here in Wales to focus on the citizens' experience of debt, identifying the scale of the debt, and also to review the international evidence base around effective support, interventions, and what really the Welsh Government and partners can actually do to try and drive the agenda forward.
Excellent, thank you. Also with me today is Professor Sharon Collard, who is Research Director of the Personal Finance Research Centre at the University of Bristol. Sharon is one of the co-authors of our report on responding to citizens in debt to public services. It's nice to have you back with us, Sharon. How are you finding working in a Welsh context again?
It's always really interesting, Craig, to look at what's happening in Wales compared to England and the rest of the UK. And with Wales recently withdrawing the use of prison sentences for council tax debt, that feels like a very positive step forward.
Great. It's great to have your thoughts here today. And finally, we have Lee Phillips, Wales Manager of the Money and Pensions Advice Service. Lee, can you just tell us a little bit about what your organisation aims to do?
So the Money and Pensions Service is a fairly new organisation. We were set up from the 1st of January this year. It's actually the Money Advice Service, PensionWise and the Pensions Advisory Service brought together into one full body. And our job is to help people across the United Kingdom make the most of their money and pensions, whether that's through prevention, whether that's money guidance. It's also pensions as well as debt advice funding in England. The debt advice funding that the Money Advice Service used to have has been devolved to Welsh Government. So we don't do that here in Wales anymore, but we still have that strategic overview and responsibility for debt advice across the United Kingdom.
Fantastic. Well, thank you all very much for joining us today. I just want to start by getting a little bit of context, so to think about why council tax debt is an issue, or to take a step back, just how big an issue is council tax debt in Wales? So Helen, can you just give us some sense of the figures?
Certainly. So council tax is used by local authorities and the police to fund a whole range of different services. And as a result of austerity, there's a lot of pressure on the local authorities with their different financial commitments. So there's a tension, and I think it's a really important tension, between trying to collect as much money as possible to provide those local services and then asking the citizen to actually cover those services. The latest figures were released last month, and although we do have a very high collection rate, it's actually 97.3%, the amount of council tax outstanding at the end of March was 94 million, and that amount keeps growing. We've been successful in collecting some of the in-year arrears, but it's been necessary to write off 6 million as uncollectible debts. That 94 million actually represents £68 per chargeable dwelling in Wales. And that amount varies between local authorities, but it also places a significant burden on households that are struggling to meet that debt. So there's just under 1.4 million households in Wales. And some of those are exempt from paying council tax, but the actual amount that we pay, it's almost £100 more than it was last year. It's gone up by £500 per household in the last 10 years. And if you're on a household that's struggling and isn't entitled to any of the exemptions, discounts or the council tax reduction scheme, it's actually a huge burden on that household if something happens unexpectedly.
Thanks, Helen. So we've got a real sense there that where Wales is doing quite well in terms of collection, but then also the huge pressures, not just collectively on financial services and public services, but then also the financial pressures on individuals. Sharon, have you got a sense of what's happening in England? Are we seeing similar trends there with collection or similar pressures for individuals?
I think the picture is quite similar in England. What we've seen in England for 2019-2020 is an increase of £78 a year or 4.7% on the 2018-2019 figure. And some of that increase actually is specifically for local authorities to fund adult social care, along with the things that Helen was talking about. So in fact, this is the fourth consecutive year of above inflation council tax rises. And so as Helen was saying, for Wales, the picture is very similar. In England, the amount of council tax going up, and so is the amount of council tax arrears that people owe. So there has been a reported 40% increase in council tax arrears in England. So in 2017-2018, it was £944 million, and that was up from £691 million in 2012-2013. And I think an interesting component of that arrears is that actually Citizens Advice research shows that actually the collection methods that are used add a lot of money to those bills. So in 2016-2017, Citizens Advice estimated that £500,000 in fees were added to people's council tax debt. So that's where the numbers are going up, and partly that's because people aren't able to pay, but it's also due to the fact that fees are added. And I think it's also interesting, we talked about Wales no longer sending people to prison for council tax debt. Since 2012-2013, in England we've seen 305 people receiving prison sentences for failing to pay their council tax, and a further 6,000 or so received suspended sentences. So we can see there that at the sharp end, we're talking about people facing prison sentences for that particular debt.
So across England and Wales then, we're getting a clear sense that council tax debt is a huge issue, potentially a growing issue, but certainly a very serious issue. I'd also guess that it's not the only issue that we should see in isolation in terms of debt. So Sharon, can we just think a bit more about this broader picture of what debt is for individuals alongside council tax debt?
Yes, well, I think one of the really interesting changes that we've seen over time is that the debt charities that operate in Wales and England and the rest of the UK have seen a significant increase, actually, in the proportion of people with household bill debts generally. And that includes council tax, but it also includes other household bills like utilities and rent. And in fact, problems with these kinds of debts have overtaken the number of consumer credit issues that people are seeking help with. So it's been quite a distinct turnaround in the last 10 years, which I think is evidence of the financial pressure that households are under, and particularly low-income households. So actually in 2018, the debt charity National Debt Line reported that 30% of its callers had council tax arrears, and that was up from 15% of its callers in 2008, so double in 10 years reporting council tax arrears. While in the same period, callers who reported credit card debts had fallen from 67% to 35%. So there's been a real kind of change in the profile of people's debts where they're seeking help from debt advice charities. And what the statistics show is that people who seek help for household bill problems tend to be, not surprisingly perhaps, in a more precarious financial situation than those who've got consumer credit debts. So households with household bill debts are more likely to be out of full-time work, and about a third of people in those situations have a mental health problem. And research by the Institute for Fiscal Studies in 2018 showed that actually being in arrears on debts or other payment obligations, like the things we've talked about, so utility bills or council tax debt, is actually highly concentrated amongst the lowest income households, which means that we've got a much higher proportion of people on the lowest incomes who are under quite severe financial pressure, with all of the attendant issues that that brings in relation to anxiety, health problems, and so on.
Okay, and so Lee, does that chime with your experience in terms of the extent of debt? So drawing on the evidence, the level of debt across the UK seems to be rising. Is that your experience with your organisation?
Yes. So the we do an over-indebtedness survey for across the UK, which we bring down to local authority level, which is quite interesting. We have those Wales data. But I think from that, there's some things that we have learned. So, for example, a third of people who are seeking debt advice have council tax arrears, which that's across the UK, which we find quite interesting. Also, interestingly, we estimate there's around 9 million adults who borrow money to buy food or pay their bills. Although this isn't just about how much income they have. It's, you know, 20% of household income is in excess of 50,000 of those people. So that's quite interesting, I thought. In regards to the situation across Wales itself, our over-indebtedness figures, and we looked at particular variables to identify what over-indebtedness looked like. And the things that, the indicators were things like people who lived in private renting or social renting accommodation. So rent is there. And people aged between 25 and 34 were particularly at risk. People with three or more children, household income with less than £10,000. So sort of challenges my last point, but interesting, different pieces of work comes up with different information. And also people who are self-employed as well, sort of they are the variables for over-indebtedness. In regards to what that looks like in Wales we estimate there's 15.5% of adults. So that's about 391,000 people in Wales who we would consider over-indebted. And by over-indebted, I mean people who can either answer, I find meeting my monthly commitments a heavy burden, sort of subjective view, or I have missed bill payments in three or more months out of the last six. So that's actual missing payments. So that's 15.5% in Wales would have identified one of those two questions. And interestingly, we can do that by local authority as well. And it'd be interesting to see how that works. So, for example, we can do it by percentages. So the highest in Wales is Cardiff with 17.6% of people, which is around just over 51,500. Merthyr, no surprise, 17.3%. And Monmouthshire is the lowest, it's 12.1%. Now, everybody would nod and go, yes, that feels about right. But when you actually look at numbers of people in those areas, actually Monmouthshire has more people than Merthyr who are over-indebted. So when you're looking at providing services for people, and you know, thinking about the actual numbers of people who need access to those services is quite interesting. And I think another thing worth noting is that in Wales, the numbers of people who feel keeping up with their payments is a burden has actually reduced. But actually, the numbers of people who are missing payments has increased. And across the UK, we know, I can give you a better idea, that the numbers of people who missed payments last year, who felt it was a heavy burden, was higher than this year. So it's the number of people who missed payments and don't and feel it's less people now feel it's a heavy burden, but more people are missing those payments, which is also, I think, quite interesting.
So we're getting then a really mixed picture in terms of people's difficulties, but also the different groups of people. So if we try and place this into the context of which individuals are struggling, you know, we might place this into debates about, say, the gig economy or zero-hours contracts or more broadly kind of ideas of squeeze middles or just about managing people. But actually, it seems to be affecting across whole different swathes of people.
It's a whole swathe of people, different people experiencing different things. And some of that is about our own preparation for how we do things. So one of the pieces of work that we do is around prevention, so financial capability. So from our 2018 survey, we did, we can say in Wales that 42% of people across Wales do not feel confident about managing their money. We can also say that 27% of people in Wales have less than £100 in savings or investment. Of people who are working age, that's sort of 18 to 65-ish, 58% did not seek financial guidance or support for an event or a situation experienced in the last 12 months that would have made it impacted on money situations. And what I think is also quite interesting is 62% of people don't focus on the long term. And there's a Wales-specific thing. So we're focused on what's in front of us now and not planning for that future, so we don't have those savings and those other things to fall back on. And that's across the board. That isn't based on a particular type.
So Sharon, can I just bring this back into the what the research evidence seems to be saying alongside these sort of testimonies and data that we've got? So are we seeing changes in how people are maybe budgeting or prioritising spending? Do people understand the importance of council tax payments? What sort of issues is the evidence bringing up here?
Just following on from what Lee was saying, the evidence is fairly consistent in relation to the kind of fundamental causes of problem debt, so not being able to keep up with your bills and household commitments. And as Lee alluded to, they are things like having lost a job or having a change in income, the gig economy also, and the rise in self-employed workers having a real impact, where you've got people with much more fluctuating and variable earnings, which makes it difficult to keep to that strict pattern of bill payment, really. So I think there is an increasing mismatch between the sources of income that people get and the regularity and the amounts of those income and the regular commitments that they have to keep up with. And some of that might well be actually, as Lee was saying, perhaps a need to think about budgeting in a different way or thinking about different tools to help people to manage that mismatch, which you can imagine if you've got income that's really kind of up and down over time and might vary really from week to week, that does make it very challenging to deal with. But there are other issues such as benefit cuts and falling real wages that make it difficult for people to manage, and increases in the general cost of living, as well as specific issues such as we've already talked about, increasing council tax, but also higher rents. And I think the other bit of the picture is actually a rise, unfortunately, in the UK, and it will be true in Wales as the rest of the UK, in work poverty. So being in work no longer necessarily means that you've been paid enough to keep up with all of the costs of living, which at the same time are rising. So what we know that is about 4 million workers in Britain are living in poverty. So that's people in work who are still in poverty as measured by their income relative to the median. And that's a rise of more than about 500,000 over the past 5 years. So it's a bit of an odd situation, really, because in the UK, and Wales is no different to this, we've got record numbers of people who are in work, but they're not necessarily earning enough to cover their living costs or pay their bills. And actually, where before some people might have had financial support from the government to help pay things like council tax, actually cuts in benefit means that more people now contribute in relation to their council tax. And in fact, a significant proportion of those people who now contribute to council tax are actually in arrears. So they've been bought in to the system, but actually are finding it difficult to make those payments. I think the other, perhaps the final thing that I would just flag is that even if you are eligible for financial support from the government, you might not be aware of that. And actually, the Welsh government estimated that the uptake of the council tax reduction scheme, which does help people on low incomes who perhaps can't afford to pay all of their council tax, the take-up for that was estimated to between 55% and 65%. So you've perhaps got between a third and a half of people who could be getting financial help, not getting that help. And that means that actually they might be struggling to manage where actually they would be able to get some financial support to do that. And the Welsh Government, in recognition of that, has been running an awareness campaign to try and increase the uptake of benefits. But actually, benefit uptake, it can be quite patchy across different benefits as well. It's not just council tax. So I think that those combination of factors make it difficult for people and lead into debt.
So it sounds like we've got a whole myriad of issues and scenarios that are affecting people, which makes it really difficult to try and build patterns of or profiles of the kind of people who are struggling. Helen, does this chime with your experiences from the data? Can we build a clear profile and pattern, or is it really, really challenging?
Unfortunately, we can't. It's really difficult because something like TV licensing is a criminal offence. You have actually got data, and it's published data, which actually shows that TV licence evasion is a gendered issue. And the idea put forward there is that it's the female that tends to be in during the day who will answer the door, and therefore they become the person that's prosecuted. Council tax bills are based on a household, based on two adults, but we don't know an awful lot more about the composition of the household. We don't know necessarily if there are children, if there are adult dependents. We might know if people have applied for a reduction because of a single person occupancy or a discount because of disability. But when it comes to actually looking at who's in arrears, we actually don't even know which band property these people live in. We tend to talk about average council tax bands as being band D, but actually you go all the way up to I, and any individual at any point could actually find themselves in a very difficult financial situation. And it could be that you've got a council tax bill. The average for a band I, the highest rate, is £3,700. You could actually find yourself in debt, losing your job with a large property or a mental health crisis. Something could suddenly happen and you find yourself in real difficulty. There's information available about the kind of composition of households, who are involved with the council tax reduction scheme, but we had real difficulty getting the information about those that were actually in arrears. And it's in some ways it's quite frustrating. You kind of imagine in this world where so much information is collected about every individual that actually we would have the information. What we've been able to find really is just at a Wales level figures from 2016-17 that have been published. But I imagine there is actually a lot of information that's trapped within local authority systems that we just can't get at. There was recently an FOI request made to find out more about just the number of liability orders, but just that first stage of the collecting the arrears process. And it would require people to go to every individual magistrate's court to get that information. And the Ministry of Justice said, no, we can't do it. So we really are struggling. And what we're relying on is the different debt advice agencies and their kind of client figures. So we really struggle to get that picture of who is actually in debt. And the very fluid nature of vulnerability really doesn't help in that situation. You can't just say that simply because you've got a diagnosed mental health problem that actually you're struggling to pay your bills. It's very individualised and it makes it so difficult to do.
So really sort of fascinating set of answers there. It seems like we can sort of link it back into some of these changes in work and society over the last few years, while all the time so many individualised cases that make it incredibly sort of difficult and complex. I just want to move on to discuss how actually local authorities respond to people in arrears. So Helen, you mentioned liability orders. Yep. Can you just give us a quick summary of the kind of process? How do they deal with it?
So most people will receive their council tax bill, should be able to pay fairly straightforward. They'll pay perhaps by direct debit, money goes out, no issue. If you're struggling, you may well receive a reminder notice, and then not long after, you'll also receive a second reminder notice. At that point, instead of being able to pay in instalments over the course of the year, you become liable for the whole debt. And that's the point where the local authority can apply to the magistrate's court to get a liability order. And a lot of the problem is that this first stage is done in batches and it's usually heavily automated and there's not an awful lot of physical kind of human contact. People don't tend to talk to the local authority to say I'm in trouble. It tends to only be actually when you have the consequences of the liability order coming in that we see a problem. So there's a number of different options. There's attachment of earnings, which is where they would go to take money from the salary. There's attachment of benefits, so those on receipt of certain benefits, they can take a small proportion out each of the monthly payments. The most common one is bailiff action, and that's conventionally thought of as being enforcement action. Petition for bankruptcy, which is very rare, and also a charge on the debtor's property. So the main ones really are the bailiff action. And it, in some ways, enforcement agents have actually got quite a bad name, but they could actually be the first human that sees the vulnerability that we're talking about. Local authorities have an option of going through all of these routes and may actually do several different approaches to try and cover the debt. When it's been proven to be unsuccessful, that's when they'll return to the court. And until recently in Wales, you would then ask to commit the debtor to prison. And there's a number of stages after that, but that's actually the first point that they would undertake a means inquiry. But it becomes a very difficult process. And if you don't really appreciate what is happening to you, you've got no representation when you get to court, suddenly you get this huge debt. And particularly if they go down the bailiff route, you start getting more and more money added to your debt. So it can escalate so quickly compared to some of the other debts that are out there.
It sounds incredibly complicated. So if we've got a really mixed picture of individual experiences, some people in long-standing financial troublesome situation, other people just finding themselves for 1 month or another month in a tricky situation, you need a system that can respond to that. And it sounds like we've got a well-established process which provides clarity but also provides rigidity.
For me, it just seems like such a frustrating process. That human contact and not necessarily appreciating individual circumstances is such a difficult one to kind of get around. We'd like to assume that people will ask for help, but they tend not to. And it does tend to be more that they'll bury their head in the sand until a bit too late on in the process. There is some good news, as I mentioned before, the attachment of benefits, the attachment of earnings through DWP needs to be involved in that. But that does actually mean that there's some kind of an assessment of whether or not people can afford things. But it's just such a challenging situation, and that issue around the vulnerability is really important. Crucially, the way that the legislation works is if you want to start going into the kind of what was a committal process, you had to prove that someone was willfully refusing to pay. But how do you actually identify between those that can't pay and those that won't pay. And I think that's the bit that we're still very fuzzy about.
So if I can just bring in Lee, so just think about that description of the process. Does that seem like a sort of accurate description to you based on what individuals are saying to you? I mean, are local authorities just in a bit of a bind here? Is it such a tricky process for them? They've got to collect all this money to fund public services. Does that seem like an accurate description to you?
I'm not an expert in how local authorities do what they do. And so it's kind of hard to answer that question. I think what I do know is there are different ways of helping the individual themselves. So, for example, if an individual is recognised as missing payments, the first question must be, is there a problem? And understanding, maybe trying to understand what that might be and what that might look like. And for example, if a local authority does an income and expenditure with an individual, will that identify any particular problems? Has that happened somewhere else in the local authority for another reason? Is that person actually sort of not over indebted, just not managing very well? Or is that person actually have a debt issue and they need to go and seek more support? And something like the standard financial statement, which is a way of having a holistic income and expenditure across the whole of the UK to say this is what's acceptable, this is how much we would have. And if you have something like that, then that can sort of sit with the client and that individual. And if whoever did that, whether that be the local authority or a debt advisor, and then that person can then go to the local authority, get it done, or take the one that they'd had done with them. And that's really clear about what some of the issues are and what they can and can't afford to do. And I think it's worth noting that 90% of the debt advice sector now use the standard financial statement, but not all local authorities by any means do. And it would be a good way of actually helping support that route for people who present with a particular issue. And I think it's also worth noting that, you know, one of the conversations Sharon certainly has said is that it's a life event that gets involved in when somebody actually starts missing payments. And we've talked about, you know, the losing your job and death and all that, but there's also good ones like getting married and having babies and all the things that happen to all of us all the time, that suddenly, you know, we had two incomes, now we're down to one. And again, it's about understanding what your rights are. Are there any benefits entitled to you? Have you maximised your income? Can the local authority identify where you can maximise your income from their own support mechanisms? And then when they refer you on maybe to someone else, to have a proper referral protocol system where they actually refer you on, hopefully with a standard financial statement, so the client doesn't have to go through it all again and have a different set of numbers presented to them. And then there's a more of a seamless service for the individual. And then local authorities can, within their own departments, identify issues and raise those and have one set of standard income and expenditure, which they can then share with other organisations. I think that might help with the client journey themselves, or those people who feel that they can go and say, I've got these issues.
So Sharon, it sounds like we've got a whole system of individual experiences, and ideally local authorities can have a system in place that can respond to that. It sounds like there's a mixed picture across Wales and the UK. Is that what the evidence seems to be suggesting to you?
Yeah, I think that's right. And just coming back to the issue about people who perhaps are in particularly vulnerable situations. So Helen mentioned people with mental health problems, but it could be a whole range of other issues that people face. Vulnerability is very multifaceted. It applies to a wide range of circumstances. And so it's quite a slippery concept, you know, for local authorities and other organisations to deal with, financial services firms, for example, who might be owed money. What the research shows is that Welsh local authorities do take account of vulnerability when they're collecting council tax, but it does tend to happen quite late in the process. So it comes back to Lee's point really about, you know, the earlier you can help somebody, the better the outcome is likely to be. And the reason that they tend to be identifying vulnerability late in the process is due to the high volume of accounts that they deal with. On the one hand, as Helen was saying, you know, batch processing of those early liability orders. But also we must accept that sometimes tenants are quite reluctant to, or householders are quite reluctant to come forward in order to deal with those issues for a whole range of reasons. So I think it is difficult, but other research that Jenny Bunt, who's doing a PhD at University of Cardiff, has looked in a great deal of detail at how local authorities define and identify vulnerability. And what she found in her research, which covered all of the local authorities in Wales, was that actually there was quite a degree of variability and inconsistency or discretion about how Welsh local authorities defined people in vulnerable situations. And actually, it tended to be very identity based. And some sources of vulnerability, like being a carer or having an addiction or having experienced a recent relationship breakdown, were largely absent. So I think there's work to be done there in terms of, and I think this is true of many organisations, not just local authorities. Vulnerability is a tricky issue to get to grips with, but it's also really important in terms of the outcomes that people experience. And I think there has been, for example, a great deal of focus in the financial services industry, partly because the regulator, the Financial Conduct Authority, has had vulnerability as a business priority for a few years now. But I think in financial services and in debt collection in particular, there has been a really strong focus on doing better in terms of identifying and supporting people in vulnerable situations and, you know, making sure that those are genuine situations. So I think perhaps there could be some learning across sectors about what works in dealing with those very difficult situations in order to make sure that actually you get a good outcome for the creditor in terms of making contact and trying to set up a repayment arrangement, or else, as Lee was saying, perhaps signposting to a debt advice service, and also a reasonable outcome for the citizen, where, you know, they end up with something that they can afford to repay. And I was just going to say, coming back to Helen's point about the escalation of debt, Citizens Advice again have done some analysis which showed that missing an average council tax payment of £167, if you missed it in the first month of the financial year, missing that payment could escalate to a debt of over £2,000 in just 9 weeks. And that's because, as Helen said, when you fall behind on your council tax bill, you become liable for the whole annual bill in just 2 weeks. So it very quickly goes from something that you might be able to pay off with some kind of forbearance and perhaps a repayment plan, to something that actually must seem mind-blowing in terms of the amount that you're expected to find. And part of that, as I talked about earlier, is the fact that fees are added on top of the original council tax debt, and that's court fees and bailiff fees. So that also leads to kind of inflating the debt for people and making it just seem completely unmanageable.
And it sounds like quite a lot of that escalation could happen through quite an automated process in that Yes. first instance as well.
Yeah, and that's where I think it's unfortunate and where more work is needed, that actually you need to be identifying people early in the process, where at the moment it's happening rather late. If they're, for whatever reason, they genuinely can't afford to pay, then they need some help to be able to do that.
That's an interesting point, and because one of the things that we at the Money and Pension Service are doing this year is actually trying to understand how do we get people to get to advice quicker. And we've been working on trying to get people to debt advice quicker and have those conversations. And I think what's particularly interesting is if you probably are aware of the mental health first aid, whereas people who aren't mental health specialists are trained to identify when there's an issue. And one of the things that we're going to be funding in Wales this year is the similar thing, but for money. And so when somebody goes, whether that's the housing association, to local authority, or whoever is interested in this training, that, you know, that there is somebody who can identify that there is a money issue. And sometimes it's just understanding what to look for and how to talk about that and how to signpost. In Wales specifically, we're going to be focusing on the mental health practitioners this year as those people who we will train up to identify where there's a money issue. And again, it's being able to just identify that and pull that out. I mean, last year for Mental Health and Awareness Week, we did some research trying to find out how it impacted on people's well-being. And it was just fascinating that 2 in 3 people had concerns about a family member, friend or work colleague's mental well-being due to stress over money. And that's huge numbers in Wales. And of the people we surveyed, 6 in 10 had expressed poor mental well-being themselves over their lifetime, and a quarter were actually suffering at that moment. Now, that's stress about their financial well-being. And so when people are not getting advice as quickly as they can, and they're not being able to get picked up quick enough, yes, their debts are going to increase, but their mental well-being is also going to decrease, which then absolutely bangs up against the other one, and the two just start banging against each other, and an individual is struggling even more because of that. And so we need to look at ways of doing more work around that.
I think that there's this issue that people don't necessarily understand. Council tax is what we call a priority debt, that there's actually quite significant implications of not paying your bill. And I don't know how that can be changed at all. Most people will say, oh, well, council tax pays for schools, pays for, but I haven't got kids, so it doesn't bother me. Refuge collection, well, it can't be that much. Pays for the sorting out the potholes, well, there's still potholes in the road. And it's that understanding of how you as an individual should be paying for the services you're using, but at the same time, that priority in terms of, is it food on the table, heating, roof over my head, or something that perhaps someone else could perhaps pay for instead of you? And I think that's an interesting situation for me. The issue around mental health is, again, that can affect anybody in society. And that whole idea of perhaps feeling under threat as well at one time of, ultimately I could go to prison if I don't pay this money, but it's a huge amount of money, where do I get it? I mean, that could be a tipping point as well.
I think alongside perhaps people not being aware of the kind of different debt priorities is the fact that people don't necessarily know where to get help. So I've been talking a lot about the statistics produced by the debt advice charities, but actually a minority of people in debt go to those debt advice charities. Most people end up managing on their own, or, you know, talking to their creditors themselves, or not talking to their creditors. So I think there's that lack of awareness about help being available, but also perhaps, certainly from other work that we've done at the University of Bristol, I think faced with an amount of money that seems completely unachievable, it might seem like a completely rational response for you to say, OK, well, there's no point in me talking to anybody because I'm never going to be able to stump up £2,000 that the council wants. So I think there is that thing actually that, you know, for a very long time, creditors and the debt advice sector have agonised over how to get people to engage earlier in the process. But actually, if what you seem to be asked for, it seems totally unrealistic, then I think that could be a real turnoff for people. So I think there is something about how we try and get people engaged in that conversation and say, well, actually, there might be something we can do because there's specialists out there who can help. And actually, the fact that you don't have much money, that shouldn't stop you going to get advice.
Yeah, I absolutely agree. I think there's a kind of a fight and flight attitude, isn't there? You either sort of get on with it, or you just sort of run away from it, and, you know, don't stop opening your mail and things. And it's quite interesting because one of the things a couple of years we did in Wales was actually do some co-design work with people in Wales who were potential debt advice clients. So they hadn't actually sought debt advice. And we were saying to them, what would it need to look like for you to actually sort of engage in the debt advice process? And it was absolutely fascinating. And it wasn't the 1 hour debt intervention. This is how it is. This is what it looks like, and go away again. They basically said what they wanted was three particular areas. They wanted to improve their finances, which is things like reducing their debt, maximizing their income, and help to save. They wanted to be encouraged to have a positive attitude to it so they could actually engage with it in a positive way rather than fear. So then make that more sustainable. But they wanted to be encouraged to stay motivated with it. And they also wanted to feel more in control of the process themselves rather than hand over that process. And then the third one was to improve their own capability too. So that's keeping track, living within the means, planning ahead. And interesting, recognizing opportunities to improve their situation in the short and longer term as well. They didn't feel they could do that. And when you're asking people who haven't engaged with the debt advice sector what it would look like, it's just really interesting about how we don't do some of that stuff. And if we wanted to encourage people to access debt advice, we talk about raising awareness of debt advice services. You know, there are free advice services out there for people to access. They don't have to pay for those. We want people to talk about it more. But ultimately, what we really need to do is make sure that the services that are available are there, that people want to engage and get what they need from those services. So there's another job of work for us to do here, not just the sort of local authority sector, but also the debt advice sector, about how do we make sure that people want to come to talk to us and how they can access those services. And there's simple things like, you know, Monday to Friday, 9 to 5, it doesn't work for all those people in work poverty who are working. They can't access those services in those times. So what is it that's available for them? How do we signpost that to people? How do we raise awareness of that? And how do we point out that people don't have to pay for those services? They're free for them.
So it sounds like we're moving quite nicely onto usually my favourite part of a discussion. How can we actually try and solve this problem a bit better than we currently do? So if we can try and think about sort of what the ideal system would do, we can probably think that it would try and identify the most vulnerable people quite early on. It should have a good system of support and advice that is accessible to people at the right time and at the right place. And that hopefully it's available uniformly across Wales. So just to think about where good practice exists, Sharon, I'll come to you first. I mean, do you get a sense across either in Wales or in the UK, do you get a sense of where good practice is happening and taking place and, you know, some initiatives or some lessons that we can maybe learn from some of those things?
Lots of the research that we drew on in our work for the recent report on citizen debt showed that there are pockets of really good practice in local authorities, in housing associations, but actually they're not uniform, they're not consistent. I would say that's true of the rest of the UK too. So it's really about how do we make sure that that best practice is shared and implemented in order for people to get good support. And I think one of the things that's happened in Wales is the new council tax protocol for Wales, which is an effort to do some of this and actually does refer to the work that we did and earlier research that we drew on in terms of the things that need to happen. It was developed by the Welsh Local Government Association in partnership with local authorities and the Welsh Government. So it's really about outlining best practice and guidance around the types of partnerships that we've been talking about, so with debt advice agencies and other kind of support services. And there's information in there about how to deal with people in vulnerable situations or not identifying or defining them. So I think that's positive. But I have to say, in the research that we did, there wasn't any shortage really of protocols or statements. And so actually it's about how they're implemented, monitoring them, evaluating how well they work to make sure that they are actually delivering what they're supposed to. And the real aim is to have something that's more consistent for people across Wales. Also, there's new proposals that would cover both England and Wales, which is something called the Breathing Space Scheme. And the idea behind this scheme is to give somebody who's in debt the right to legal protections from further creditor action. So that would mean that they wouldn't be contacted by creditors, the interest and the fees and charges on their debts would stop for a period of 60 days while they receive debt advice. So it is contingent on the fact that they would seek debt advice from a registered, authorised provider with a view to entering into some kind of appropriate debt repayment scheme or some other kind of scheme that would be appropriate in their particular context. And it's interesting that council tax and other debt to government is included in those proposals, which I know the debt advice sector and consumer groups felt was really, really important. And that scheme is going to be introduced, but not until early 2021. So I think that would make quite a big difference in terms of actually saying, okay, well, I think it comes back to what Lee was saying, because it actually gives a really positive kind of reason for engaging with debt advice, because actually you're going to have this period of time where if you're talking to a debt advisor, you've got some time to try and sort stuff out. So I think that's really positive. The other thing I would say actually is, we talked about a bit earlier, is making sure upstream that citizens get the financial support that they're entitled to. So it is things like making sure that people are receiving the council tax reduction scheme and trying to kind of make sure that people don't get into debt in the first place. There are much wider kind of social policy issues there for Wales and the rest of the UK to deal with around, you know, the minimum wage, national living wage and so on, where actually we can see a reduction in work poverty. I think that would make a big difference.
Helen, can you just add to that with some of the good practice that we can see across
certainly. Wales? Yeah, certainly. I mean, we've mentioned the pre-action protocol already within Wales, which I think is a fantastic move that came about around the time that we'd actually published the report. And we've also mentioned that we've ended imprisonment for non-payment of council tax in Wales. Both fantastic steps forward. I think one of the most significant things for me is the exemptions that are being brought in for care leavers. This is a particularly vulnerable group of people who have historically really struggled in terms of financial awareness and managing their own budgets. And this again gives them almost like a breathing space, typically until they're about 25, where they're exempt from paying. It's comparatively small numbers in each local authority, but I think it's a sign of the growing awareness that some groups in society are just that little bit more vulnerable and may need some help and assistance. Martin Lewis was interviewed recently in terms of the exemption that does it already exists around mental impairment. And he mentioned about the fact that Wales is leading the way. And I do think that there are some really good examples in Wales, which we need to be aware of. And we just need to keep the momentum going, really.
Can I just say on that point as well, I think there is maybe compared definitely to England, I think there is a stronger policy framework in Wales that's been created over the past 5-6 years or so, where we've got the Wellbeing of Future Generations Act. We've got a much stronger financial inclusion framework, I would say, in Wales. And I think all of that's really helpful when talking about these issues, because it's kind of scaffolding for this, for these innovative approaches and for that change to happen and really to kind of become embedded in Wales. I think that's a really positive thing.
So we're maybe starting to get a picture of a system that is capable of responding to these issues. Yeah. Lee, does that reflect with your experience? Then also within that experience, what is the role for advice and support agencies within that?
Absolutely, I think that's right. Interestingly, in Wales, the advice sector has other hooks and levers to support it. So, for example, the National Advice Network, which was a group set up to inform and advise the minister on how advice services work in Wales. And I'm a member of that group. It's literally one group has changed, with chair has changed, so there's a new chair, so there'll be a new way of moving forward. So I can talk about what we've done up to this point. And there's an Information and Advice Action Plan that's being identified by the National Advice Network that talks about quality national advice service. It says it's free and accessible for all. It's about improving well-being of people in Wales. It includes prevention as well as crisis in there. The idea is it is more of a holistic approach to that. And you sort of look at the root causes of issues rather than just deal with the issue. So to somebody presents at the local authority with a council tax bill, which they are missing payments on, actually there's probably something otherwise going on underneath some of that stuff too. So it's about being able to identify what those issues are and deal with some of those root causes. It's about recognising that when a person goes in to get advice, it's not just that one person, there's a whole household behind that, and there's a whole other set of issues that might be going on there too. And the National Advice Network has put a paper together in their Information Advice Action Plan, sort of tries to do some of that. And interestingly, the latest round of Welsh Government funding that's currently out for tender includes the more holistic approach and in prevention and crisis. Is the single advice fund, and it's about social welfare law, so it's not about having one piece of advice. You get housing advice or you get debt advice. It's about more of a client focused piece of advice, which I think is great. I think also worth mentioning here is the Commission on Justice in Wales as well, so they're actually also including advice services within that, understanding that sort of national advice support for people in Wales too. So I think it's lots going on at that kind of level. The sector has sometimes worked well together and sometimes not so well. And I remember back in, I think it was 2013, where the Legal Services Commission stopped funding services and Welsh Government did an advice services review. And we talked about collaboration more between advice agencies. And what came out of that was actually something quite interesting about, I don't recognise the quality standards you have, and therefore I'm not comfortable maybe referring somebody to you because I don't know what kind of service my client's going to get. So one of the things that came from that is, of course, and through the National Advice Network, is the Information and Advice Quality Framework. It's a Wales standard that goes from information right up to specialist, and that's about helping encouraging people working better together. So if somebody does come to somebody who may be a housing specialist or somebody who may be a discrimination specialist, that all those other issues can maybe get picked up. That's the hope anyway. So there's a lot happening, and we also sort of did a mapping of advice services that are out there, and the Money and Pension Service are currently doing a supply map now. But also, it's about understanding what need is. So a lot of the time in the past, we did funding based on supply and demand. So if you had an advice agency in the centre of an area and you had queues out the door, you would have the supply of the agency and the demand was the queues at the door. The fact that the queues of people at the door had come down the valley from 20 minutes away on a bus didn't come into it. And so I think what the National Advice Network has also done is look at need. So where is the need? And then maybe look at need as well as everything else. So that actually changes it and puts it back into the client's door, so to speak. So you know, the client is getting the advice coming to them rather than the other way around, which I think might be also quite good. And that's all very Wales-specific work that's going on, which is potential, being quite exciting.
Fantastic. So I guess across both the system and advice agencies, we're getting a real sense of some sort of progress in how we can respond to this. We're coming towards the end of our podcast now. I feel like we've developed a good understanding of the problem and articulation of the state of play, and then how we might start to do things a bit better and how some of that's already starting to happen. I just want to bring some of these issues back together. So to ask each of you, accepting that it is such a world of complexity on this issue, but if there's sort of one takeaway point for listeners today that you would sort of reflect on, Helen, what would that be for you?
So what I would really like to see is maximising the opportunities, for example, under the Digital Economies Act, for actually more joined up thinking with perhaps adult social services, talking to those that are responsible for the sorting out council tax, and actually just trying to get a wider picture really of people's circumstances. And if there is information on different council systems, can that be shared? But similarly, can we be accessing information more readily through DWP about whether or not someone isn't actually entitled to benefits? And is that a possible way of avoiding enforcement action?
Fantastic. Thank you, Helen. Sharon?
I think mine kind of builds on Helen's a little bit, because it's a kind of maybe a research and evaluation point, which is, I think when we were doing the work that was published last year, I think we still lack a really strong business case for better practice amongst local authorities. And that was the thing that kept coming back, because we have to understand, you know, they are under huge pressure to collect council tax to pay for services, and we as citizens would be the first to complain if we saw a reduction in the amount or the quality of services. So they are under a huge amount of pressure, and I think sometimes it's quite difficult to move from the thing that you're doing that seems to be working okay to something that would work okay for you and perhaps work better for your citizens as well. So I think having some kind of sense that yes, there is a business case for doing things in a different way that won't harm your collections and actually might work better for your citizens, I think if we could work on that going forward, that would be really positive.
Fantastic, thank you. Lee?
I'm going to cheat. I have two, I'm afraid. But they're short-term and long-term, so that's the cheat. I think in the short term, what we do, there's a few things I'd like us to do. We need to talk more about debt. We need to take away the stigma about talking about it and encouraging people to go and seek support as and when they need it. And so that's things like raising awareness of the free support that's out there. And we need to train more people to identify when there's an issue, whether that's a local authority worker or whether that's people who are going into other people's houses, and just spot the signs and know what to do about that to help that individual. And also maybe get more local authorities using the standard financial statements across Wales, so there's an easier client journey and an easier way of understanding income and expenditure, which is less subjective and more universality to that. So those would be my short-term ones. And then my long-term is looking more at the Future Generations work and looking at improving financial wellbeing across Wales for all people, children and young people, as well as their families. Maybe doing more financial wellbeing work with employers, so those people who are in work poverty know where to get more support, and those who aren't maybe start saving and understanding, you know, how to borrow better. Maybe looking at more parental activity and support, teaching their children about money, more work in with teachers to help them with the confidence to deliver financial education, so those future generations coming through maybe don't have quite so many issues that we are experiencing at the moment.
Two interesting points, so I'll let you get away with that. Okay, so that's coming towards the end of our podcast now. Thank you to Lee, thank you to Sharon, and thank you to Helen for joining us. You can find more information on our report on responding to citizens in debt to public services in the description box. Thank you all for listening to this episode of Pep Talk.
Thank you for listening to this edition of Pep Talk. Don't forget to click the subscribe button and rate us on your favourite podcasting app. And I hope you'll join us again soon for another Pep Talk.